Hi, I'm Deborah Lindad, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And there's many, many toxic chemicals in the world. This is why we have to talk about how to be toxic free, because there's toxic chemicals in your hairspray, toxic chemicals in your orange juice, toxic chemical in the interior of your car. Everywhere there's toxic chemicals, but there also are products that don't have toxic chemicals in them or have so many less toxic chemicals in them that it really isn't a danger. So you can do things to remove toxic chemicals from your home. You can do things to remove toxic chemicals from your body, and that's what we talk about on this show. Today we're going to be talking with a very interesting, very informed, very experienced woman who has been working in the field of toxics for many, many years. But first, there's a couple things I want to tell you. First is, on the website browser I use, they give you a little quote of the day. And this morning, the quote was from Henry Ford. He said, "Failure is the opportunity to begin again more intelligently." And I consider toxic chemicals to be a failure. And we can just begin again. We can just say, okay, toxic chemicals, be gone. And begin again more intelligently. Many people already have begun again more intelligently. So we can all just, everybody can do that. And it's just think in a different way. Also, this morning I was cleaning my house. I decided that I was just really going to get rid of everything that I was no longer using and was outdated. And I was cleaning my office and just, you know, how papers pile up and all those things. And by the time I got to the end of it, I thought, you know, this is just, you just need to simplify that. And one way to simplify is to just eliminate the toxic chemicals. Just eliminate everything that has toxic chemicals in it. And then life is much simpler because what's left is everything that's healthy and good for us. So I've known about my guest today. Her name is Monona Russell. She's a chemist, artist, industrial hygienist, and president founder of the Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety. It's a not-for-profit corporation dedicated to providing health and safety services to the arts. Now, I have known of her because I just met her on the phone a couple of weeks ago, but I've known of her for as long as I've been doing my work, which is more than 30 years. So this obviously says how old I am and how old she is. But I want to tell you that we are both still alive and kicking and working in the field of toxics. The other day, I was talking to somebody on the phone, a young man who made reference to people who were born after 1970 not knowing how to use computers. And I said, oh, that puts me in that category. And he says, no. And I said, yeah. And I said, how old do you think that I am? And he said, 30 years old. And I said, ha, ha, ha. He says it must be all because you don't use toxic chemicals. And I think that's true. People who are away from toxic chemicals are much younger, much longer. So, hi, Monona.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Well, I've had such a schedule because I don't know if you know, but OSHA has a December 1st deadline for a whole new training on chemicals, hazard communication. So every single employer is supposed to be doing this training. And the colleges, you know, some of them are just figuring it out. So I'm like a one-legged lady in an ass-kicking contest trying to run all over the country.
Well, good for you. So there's so much we can talk about. I hardly know where to begin. First, just tell us how you got interested in toxic chemicals. Why do you do what you do?
Well, you know, it wasn't obvious at first because what I really wanted to do was be a doctor. But remember, that was the 50s. Mm-hmm. And when I also was raised in show business. Now, there's no discrimination in show business because as long as men can't sing soprano, you know, you didn't have a problem. So I left my family at 17, got off the road, and enrolled in the university. Got all A's and expected to be welcomed in medical school. And of course, the courts had just decreed they had to take 10% women, and they gave us this lecture telling us how they hated us and didn't want us there, and I just gave them the sign of the finger and left. so I got a degree in chemistry instead with a minor in math, and I wanted to be a chemist, and in fact, the industrial lab I went to work for was going to pay my way through medical through a graduate school in chemistry. However, I I was a member of the NAACP, and it participated in marches, couldn't get security clearance, and when they found that out, they had no use for me either. So then I went, I thought, well, I'll go into art. Surely there's no discrimination. It was the worst of all. Nevertheless, I worked as a research chemist at the University of Wisconsin to put myself through art school. And every day I went from one department to the other and back again, and it dawned on me I was seeing the same chemicals in both departments. I was seeing acids for etching and solvents and pigments and dyes and all the same stuff I was seeing in the chemistry department. So I started doing lectures on this, and people just walked out. And I thought, you know, if I found something that's this obvious and this true and it makes people this mad, it's probably a good thing.
Yes.
And so it always was a sideline and sooner or later took over everything that I did because there isn't really anybody else that really does this in this area. I mean, there are industrial hygienists and there are safety professionals, but very few with real expertise in theater and in art.
Yes, I'm very impressed with the how you brought your interest in toxics into a very specific area that you have an interest and experience in. And I think it's wonderful because you're right that nobody could, well, somebody would need to have, like I can't do it. And I mean, I'm not an industrial hygienist or a chemist, but as a consumer advocate, I can look at other products that I'm familiar with, but I'm not familiar with the world of art materials like you are. And so you're absolutely the perfect person to do it, and I'm sure many people are very grateful that you are doing that.
Yeah, it's also a tricky field because, I mean, I carry $2 billion in liability insurance, and I plan buildings. And I mean, it's not an easy field for people to do. It can't be, you know, just because people are interested. And in fact, if this radio broadcast is heard by somebody who really has degrees in chemistry and expertise in both fields, I'll give them the corporation. I'm really looking for someone to help out with some of this work because it's far too much for me.
Well, and I'm sure that there's going to be more because as more and more people become familiar with the problem and that there's more acceptance that toxics are a problem. I understand that years ago people would just walk out and say, what is she talking about? You know, and it's sometimes a difficult thing to confront. So I just want to, I'm looking at your biography here on your website. It's the Arts Crafts TheaterSafety.org website. And there's just a whole list of things that you do, including things like doing building planning to put in the proper ventilation into buildings so that art materials can be used. Would you tell us, before we go on, because I want you to tell us a lot about the toxic chemicals in the arts and better alternatives, but can you explain what an industrial hygienist is?
Doesn't it sound like we clean teeth in a factory?
Yeah.
It really does. It means that we look at various workplaces and look at all of the issues having to do with health and safety and protective equipment and so on in those places and advise. And my areas are primarily in ventilation and ventilation design and in training toxic chemical protection of workers from toxic chemicals and so on. And over the years, I've become a regulatory expert by virtue of I've been reading the Federal Register in hard copy since 1977, so I don't know anybody else that crazy.
I've read a little bit of the Federal Register, but probably not as much as you. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. I'm Deborah Lindad. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Monona Russell, chemist, artist, industrial hygienist, and savior of artists from toxic chemicals. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and my guest today is Monona Russell, chemist, artist, industrial hygienist, president and founder of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety, a not-for-profit corporation that addresses the health and safety in the arts. And she's also the author of 9 books, isn't it? 9 books?
Yeah.
And I think that your first book was in 1990, is that right?
86.
1986, that's right. I see one down here, 1986. Well, my first one was in 1984.
Okay, there we go.
So we've been doing this for about the same period of time. In the field of arts is a very wide field. I'm trying to figure out where to start to ask you a question, because you cover everything from, I guess, painting and sculpting to theaters to what give us like an overview of the kinds of things that you work with.
Well, yeah, see, I actually have 2 hats. You know me as the president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety, which is for anyone who calls in the arts at all. But I'm also the safety officer for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local USA 829. So I get to all the film locations and all of the TV studios and all of that kind of thing as well. And we've also formed here in New York something called the New York Production Locals. So when I go on those sets, I'm talking for everybody, including SAG and after everybody. So it's a very interesting career, and that's why I'm sure I couldn't be doing all this if there were a lot of other people to split up this work. But when I walk into an art studio, or even if it's a private studio or whatever, what I'm looking for is the things they probably have looked at over and over but don't see. There's a lot of electrical hazards, a lot of chemicals that they could replace with safer ones. Sometimes there are ventilation systems they think work and they don't. Many private artists really don't have ventilation, and they think they can by just putting a fan in a window, and sometimes that's actually counterproductive if they don't know where their air is coming from in that room. So there's all those basics, and sometimes we can fix these things by just explaining to them what the principles are and why we're going to put the fan somewhere else, and we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know. So, and after all these years, very often, if there is a solution, I probably know it. And
I'm sure you do. I understand that, because it's easy for me to walk into a house, a different environment. I can go into a house, because I've gone into so many of them, and I can immediately point out where the toxic chemicals are. And it's the same toxic chemicals in all the houses. People are using the same kind of materials and products, and they're all being toxic. And so I would imagine that you're doing pretty much what I do when I walk in a house, is you're looking and finding the toxic chemicals and showing people how to replace them with something safer.
Yeah, get in all those little hidey holes where the bad stuff is hanging out.
Yeah. Good. So what are some typical toxic chemicals that you find in the arts?
Well, of course, archival pigments are not FDA-approved food dyes. All of the pigments are toxic, and there's a mistaken type of labeling that tells you that these things are non-toxic. Well, that's just not possible. They're either untested organic pigments, or they are metallic pigments, almost all of which are toxic. They can be based on cadmium, lead, chrome, mercury, whatever, because art materials are exempt from the consumer lead laws. They also have their own very, very inferior labeling standard, which literally can call untested chemicals non-toxic. And many times they will call lead products non-toxic, because the toxicologist who okays that labeling will say, well, yes, if it's used as directed, they shouldn't get more exposure than we think is okay. Well, yeah, okay, for WHO number one. And number two, cyanide plating baths are non-toxic if used as directed, too. I would really like to know what's in it. And I've never seen an artist use a material as directed, so, you know, that's just spurious. It's really important to change the labeling, change people's attitude so that they can look at these things with the eye that they need to realize that they're not what they think they are, that the organic pigments have not been tested for long-term toxicity, and many of them are in chemical classes that we know will be toxic or cause cancer if they ever are tested. Hello? Jack?
Yes.
I'm off the phone.
Huh?
I'm disconnected.
I don't know.
We've got, oh, there we go. Here we go. So I think you're hearing me now. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. We just had a technical difficulty with my computer. So, Monona, are you there? Hello? Okay, we're getting our guests back on the line. So we've been talking about toxic chemicals in the arts, and I didn't hear the last thing that she said, but we'll get this all sorted out. And I'm just writing a note to my producer here. Computers are interesting things. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, let's get back to what we were talking
when
about.
When was I talking to air?
You were just talking to air. I didn't even hear. But, you know, I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned about that the labeling laws don't apply to art materials. And are we talking about professional art materials or commercial art materials, like that people would buy at the drugstore or an art material store? What are we talking about?
Children's, everything. Everything comes under a separate law. It's a separate amendment to the Federal Hazardous Substances Act, and I'm one of the fool activists that got it passed, and we thought we were doing a good thing, and it turns out to be absolutely the worst thing we could have done, because what this law does is it institutes an American Society of Testing Materials standard called ASTM D4236. It's a chronic hazard labeling standard. In other words, acute tests very often are done on chemicals, like whether mm-hmm. you put it in your eye, you go blind, you swallow it, you drop dead. But things like cancer, birth defects, long-term organ damage, those things weren't being tested for at all in the 80s. Not at all.
No, that's right. That's right.
Right, so we got a law, because there were all of these products for children that contained, you know, asbestos, powdered asbestos, and lead, and all kinds of things. So we did get this law in, but unfortunately we were young and dumb. And the way the law reads is, a toxicologist reviews the ingredients as provided by the manufacturer, and then certifies the labeling as meeting this standard, and if he decides that it's non-toxic, well, then he certifies that they can use that label, and if he certifies it doesn't need any warnings, and if it's really serious, then he will specify the warnings, and then you will see that all art materials sold legally in this country say conforms to ASTM
D4236. And it says on the label.
Right, and who pays the toxicologist for the review?
The manufacturer.
We were not thinking. Yeah. So it went in the toilet real soon.
So we should just ignore those labels.
Oh, yeah. Paul, please, worse than ignore them.
Okay.
Plus, you see, if you are not using that system, if there's 1% of a toxic material or 0.1% of a known carcinogen, you have to declare it on a material safety data sheet so we can at least find out if there's some real bad stuff in there.
Right.
But the people who label under ASTM D4236 simply reference this standard and tell you nothing. Absolutely nothing. So it's worse than that. It's a terrible law. I mean, I've called for having it repealed, because it's just not working at all.
So should parents be concerned about children like using crayons?
I would
and
be.
Markers and
here's what I would tell all parents.
Please,
tell
all
those
parents.
are not Those are not food dyes, and even if they were food dyes, I wouldn't want my kid playing with red number 40. So, you know, they need to not do things like finger painting, which is, you know, kids love that. But you need to teach kids that if it's brightly colored, you don't put your hands in it and mush around in it. You need to teach them common sense. We have to stop breaking out the cookies and the juice after the class because these things have long-term issues.
I remember in school they were just like taking the finger paint and not even finger paint, tempera paint and stuff, and we were just putting our hands in it. Are they still doing
crazy.
That?
Crazy. Yeah, absolutely. If it wasn't for crayons, I'd have gone hungry as a child. I don't know about you, but we need to not do that.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm so glad that you're telling us about this because I thought that if it says non-toxic on the label and that there's an organization behind it, that it should mean that when they say a toxicologist is checking this out. But I guess
it doesn't work. I've actually done two lawsuits where I was retained as an expert for brain-damaged kids. We got big settlements from the ceramic glaze people, and that toxicologist was on the other side of those losing cases. So, I mean, I have a long history with this labeling. It is not what people think it is, and I would just really counsel people not to pay any attention to it and use common sense when working with art materials, because the real secret to industrial hygiene is nobody was ever harmed by a chemical to which they were not exposed. You know, so keep it off your skin. Don't snort it, you know.
Well, first rule of poisoning is that the first thing you do when somebody's poisoned is take them away from the poison.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, if you've been exposed to something that's poisonous, go out of the room, you know, throw up the poison if you ate it. That's the first thing that they do is take people away from the poison. So I think, why not just stay away from the poison to begin with?
Well, you know, way back since the Renaissance and even way before, there was this thing we called a brush. If the paint goes from the tube to the palette to the brush to the canvas, you didn't have an exposure. But if you can't get it through your head and you're going to be putting your hands on that, it's just not smart. Lead is a skin absorber. You know, and we don't know about many of the other metals.
Yeah, yeah. So basically you don't want to put your hands in it, but if a child were, say, using a crayon but not touching it, or using paints with a brush, that would be safer than putting their hands in it or eating the crayon.
Yes, and the art room should not be your kitchen.
Yes.
You
because,
wouldn't bring
oh, certainly,
those
you put down a sandwich
your...
and it gets paint all over
right.
it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and dust doesn't settle everywhere but the coffee cup. We just have to get common sense.
Yeah, it is common sense. Wow. I'm just sitting here still stunned to hear this because it's a lot worse than I thought. So people can get material safety data sheets for the art materials, but they don't say anything, you said.
Well, here's the really interesting thing. You've called it a perfect time because just about the time people finally learn about material safety data sheets, bingo, you're going to have to learn a new name. It's going to be a safety
tell us about
data
that.
Sheet now. It's going to be a safety data sheet now. All of the laws are changed, and the reason is we either have to change all of our safety data sheets and our industrial labels. So the art materials labels aren't going to change, but the industrial materials have to change. And a lot of the stuff that you buy in the hardware store, a lot of that's all going to change, because if we don't, we can no longer export to the rest of the world, because the rest of the world has passed us by. The Europeans were the first to adopt a UN system of labeling and safety data sheets that makes a lot more sense than the crud we've got. And almost every other country in the world has adopted it. So we have no choice, and it's a joy, because this new safety data sheet has 16 sections, it's very detailed, it's not up to the manufacturer what he wants to say and how he wants to say it. Now, the problem
is... When do these go into effect?
Oh, they've got until December 1st to do the training, and by 2015, they've got to be completely switched over. So it's a very interesting thing, and how many people know it? It's law, you know. I'm amazed that people don't know, but this has happened. Well, one of the things is nobody watches the OSHA regulations because they haven't basically changed essentially since 1971 when OSHA was founded. Because every time they tried to change something, industry would form coalitions, take them to court, and get it reversed. So our air quality standards for the workplace are still primarily 1971 ones. So it's been a hassle. But this change went right through because industry can't really fight it. It's not up to us.
Yeah.
So there is a little hoofbeat on the horizon there. They still aren't going to do what the Europeans are doing in terms of their toxicity labeling, because they're going to either tell you the tests or the words no data available are going to be on each test blank, so that we will really know that most of the chemicals that we're using have never been tested for cancer, never been tested for reproductive hazards, never been tested for any of this. Nothing you use has been tested. You know,
yes.
We think they have, but they haven't.
No, they haven't.
And somebody must be testing. No, they are absolutely not. They test when there's a pile of bodies and somebody has to find out why.
Yep.
That's always been the case.
Well, why do you think that is the case? Why do you think that all these chemicals are being allowed on the market?
Well, that's really simple, because it started with the Industrial Revolution. It's never been any different.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing that's been different is advertising, which we're a bunch of fools to read. When Madame Curie and her husband worked out, you know, isolating radium, what happened? People said, "Oh, look at that! It glows in the dark. Must be good for you." They put it in patent medicines. It was only after everybody.
And they put it in dishware. That you used to have glow in the dark dishware.
Yeah, I mean, there's only two steps to progress. And that's been true in the rest of the world, too, until recently, until Europe woke up and smelled the coffee. Find a chemical, find a market for it. There's never been any testing in between. And so, you know, I'm looking at the Chemical Abstract Service website right now on my computer.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
There's 73,193,912 chemicals that have been registered. Now, if I wait a second, it'll be 13. You can watch the counter. Yes.
Well, we need
now.
To
it's
take a break,
now.
Actually.
It's 50.
We need to take a break, and let's find out when we come back from the break what the number is. You're
okay.
Listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm talking with the marvelous Monona Russell about toxic chemicals in the workplace, in art supplies, in our children's art supplies, in our homes. She's just a wonderful source of information, and we'll be back right after this. I switched from microphone through the computer to telephone, and I noticed I still had my microphone on, so I was hoping that I just unplugged it. It didn't get sound over there and sound over here. Anyway, I'm back.
Okay.
And we'll continue. So what's the number?
Okay, well, 73 million, of course, is the big one. It's when I wrote my book, Pick Your Poison, in 2011, it was 50 million. It's now 73,193,994. So it'll probably, while we're talking here, they'll probably pop over to 194,000. It'll pop over to. So, you know, and there's about 1,000 chemicals worldwide that have been evaluated for their cancer effects. Figure it out. There, it just popped
over.
Yeah. It just popped over. So,
I'm just looking up in my book, Toxic Free. When I wrote my book Toxic Free a few years ago, and let's see what the number was then. I think, oh, here, okay, oh, here. Now, what's the date on my book was
It was published in, I'm looking at, I don't remember the exact year. It was just a couple years ago. Copyright 2011. So this was in 2010 when I was writing this. And I wrote, it's on page 15. It was, on that day, it was 57,110,200. 110,200. 57,110,200. And in the time it took me to type that number, it had switched to 201.
In 2009, when Europe had adopted this rule that I was talking about to change all of this and to force industry to test the 30,000 high production volume chemicals that they want tested, that's when the speed really increased. In 2009, they were registering chemicals at a rate of 25 per minute.
Wow.
So it was just awesome. And it's infinite. If you know anything about chemistry, you know it's infinite. You can, there's no end to the number of chemicals that they can invent. And 21 million of those are available for catalog purchase right now.
21 million. You know, when people talk about chemicals, I mean, just like the news media, they say there's 80 million chemicals, but there's
no,
more than 80 million.
80
million. 80,000. They say 80,000 chemicals.
Because
and that's
they
the
don't
number
know
that's
how
always
to read.
Used.
They don't know how to read. 84,000 is the number in TSCA, the Toxic Substance Control Act, that EPA has control over, supposedly. But EPA has no control over those chemicals because in order to force industry to test any of them, they have to prove beyond doubt, in fact, usually in court, that there is a substantial risk. Well, how do you prove a substantial risk when the whole definition of this is there is no data? It's a catch-22 law, and that's why of the 83,000 until just recently, they only tested around 200 of those 84,000.
And so then what happens, now please confirm this for me, for our listening audience, then what happens is that these toxic chemicals go out into the market, and people get sick, and then they get excited about something like bisphenol A, and then there's some studies, and then maybe they ban it.
That's right, and usually it's only after there's complaints or issues somehow that come up that it's such, and industry loves it when the activists get together and ban a chemical. Oh my goodness, they know you're wasting your time and your energy and your money to do this. Bisphenol A, bisphenol S, bisphenol C, bisphenol F are already in your bottles. What do they do? We don't know. There's no point banning a chemical if you aren't going to make them test the substitute for that chemical.
Yeah. So given all this, given that there are all these toxic chemicals out there and they're everywhere, and if we ban one, there's just another one coming down the pike every second. I mean, what's the number now? Are you still on the website?
Yeah, 72,194 and 39. So it flipped over to the 4,000, and it's now 4,039 on the end. Down is 40.
And this is just all we were talking. And this isn't even listeners. Monona and I talked about starting the clock on this at the beginning of the show, and then we forgot to do it. So we were going to find out how many new toxic chemicals were introduced during the period of time of this show, and so we started late. But see, you can see how fast it's ticking, and this is
well. I did write it down. I wrote down the number just before we started talking. So when we finish, let me know, and I will subtract it and tell you.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad you did that. What is your recommendation, given that we are living in this toxic experiment? What would you like to tell people?
Really, what I think we have to stop, the thing we can do, all of us, is stop being fools and stop believing the advertising and stop believing that somebody's testing and somebody's looking out for us. If you just get that right there, you've made a difference. Second of all, we have to start talking to people and the activist organizations about not being patsies and banning chemicals one at a time without asking for testing. And I know there's a Lautenberg bill that you could support, but that list is 200 chemicals, revolving list. That's not the real issue. We have to open the discussion again on what's really going wrong, because we're wasting our time, and industry will be able to do a dance around what people are planning now. Really, education is it, and political action is it, because you can't protect yourself. The computer you're looking at, the computer I'm looking at, you can't sell that in Europe. You cannot sell your computer in Europe. Why? Because it contains the polybrominated biphenyl ethers that are banned over there, some of the phthalates that are in there, and they're coming out in your house, in your dust. They're there in urine and in, mm-hmm. in your blood, mm-hmm. are in there. Mm-hmm. That computer is made with lead, cadmium, mercury, and chrome. You can't sell that in Europe. They make them without. Why don't we know that? Why don't we just tell industry, hey, you know the ones you make for Europe? Make them for us. We'll pay the extra buck and a half. That's where we've got to do it. We have to inform ourselves. We have to tell industry, because, you know, what we don't get is government will really do what we want it to if we get together and make them. We do have that ability, but nobody wants to spend the time, the energy. Nobody wants to learn anything. I've never seen a culture that doesn't want to learn. But it's tough. I train, and I can tell you that there's a culture out there that just wants to be left alone to do whatever they're doing now. We have to change that, and I don't know how that, but all of the other things, you know, trying to avoid this and trying to avoid that, it's helpful. But damn, it's not getting at the root of the problem.
No, it's not getting at the root of the problem. It's like saying that in my life, I've seen it for myself and for other people, that if you make wise choices, you can protect yourself to a certain degree. Like, my health used to be very bad because of my toxic chemical exposures, and now it's much better. And even at my age that I am, people don't think that I'm my age. And I think that toxic chemicals actually make you look older. they damage your skin and all those kinds of things. People that are interested in anti-aging, toxic chemicals are certainly, avoiding them will certainly help you look younger. But I forgot what I was going to say. Toxic chemical moment. What were we talking about before?
We were talking about things that you can avoid to make life better. I mean, if you stop eating shellfish. By the way, did you see the new study on, you know, the 212 chemicals that the Centers for Disease Control is monitoring in all of us, and all those PCBs and all that stuff?
Yeah. Is there a new one?
Oh, they've been doing
one
now.
About.
But there was one done in Europe. Exeter University in London took all of that data and divided it by socioeconomic status. Fascinating.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The poor have high levels of 9 substances, and they're the ones you'd expect: lead, cadmium, industrial chemicals like antimony, and the cheap phthalates that are in vinyl plastics and a few other things. But the rich got a dose. Boy, did they get a dose. That's really good news to me. They got it from sunscreen. They got it from shellfish. They got mercury and cesium and thallium.
I'm going to look up this study.
Look up Exeter, UK, socioeconomic status. They divided the data by socioeconomic status. It's on, I think it's EPH. You should be able to find it. Environmental health.
I'll be able to find it.
I think it's there.
Yeah,
cool. I just wrote an article about it. I can send you that, too.
Well, tell us what the number is, because we've only got a second.
The number of what?
The number that's on the CAS site.
Oh, the number. Okay. Let me 4110 at the end. I'm gonna subtract it now.
That's the final music. So keep talking over it.
Yeah, 484 chemicals were invented while we talked.
Thank you so much, Winona Russell. And please go to Toxic Free Talk Radio and go to her website. toxicfreetalkradio.com and find out her website and go there. And thank you so much, Evelyn Dad. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. Bye.
Bye-bye.